know, what's going to happen with the area closes and some of the concerns. So invited Justin to kind of talk through. I think it's a good opportunity for everyone to kind of hear, like, what is going on in our parks. And Justin and his team are big partners with us. We work very closely with him to help give us support.
My name is Justin Hamilton. I'm the multi-agency resource coordinator for the city of Tucson. I'm also the outreach supervisor for Homeless Protocol. Back in, I think it was late January, Matthew reached out to us about the park project. We started a soft outreach at the park. It was reoccurring every Wednesday. As of like a couple weeks ago, we started to ramp that effect up to 3 times a week. So on Mondays, Primavera is out there. On Wednesdays, we have the community outreach with approximately 30 different providers with detox services, available housing that's out there on Wednesdays. And then Fridays, our camp assessors pay a visit to the park, educate people on the time that the park is closing, and remind them that the park is closing on the 21st. So we're just going to keep up that approach for, you know, the next few weeks, and hopefully we'll make a dent and have some people come in the shelter. Because ultimately, that's what we want. That's what my team asks for people to come in the shelter, so that's the change that we want to see. I mean, we can bring supplies all day long, but sustainable change is bringing people in the shelter and making life change. So that's the goal of my guys on Fridays when we go out to spread our education. We have started an ops plan with Operation Division South, which is going to be a little bit similar to the ops plan it was the last time we closed Santa Rita Park. I do not believe Environmental Services will be involved this time. It may be like the only difference. But so we're just going to keep our reoccurring outreach up. As far as the park perimeter and the area around the park, the washes, the railroad tracks, the neighborhoods, the alleys. So we've already deemed that area around that park as a hotspot with Homeless Protocol, which we went there twice yesterday around the railroad tracks. So we're going to start an every Tuesday cleanup, which seems more feasible at this time with the lack of resources. So every Tuesday, we're going to go around the park, down through the alleys, through the washes, and try to keep up, you know, the optics of the around the park looking good. So when we do actually abate the park, it's not bad. I just wanted to inform everybody, we are working on it, even though you don't see us out there. We are there, and there's a lot of people that go out there every week to Santa Rita Park to try to help those folks.
Do you have any questions?
Yes, first of all, I want to take the step from Fox and that. Recreation that's given to the Armory Park Neighborhood Association to explain the Santa Rita Park closing and the homelessness issue that we're just talking about. You know where you are. You did a great job. Okay, I really appreciate that. Okay, I mean, it's a great deal. I was reading the other day a post by Vice Chair Commissioner Mano Getsi, which was a repost from the Ward 6 mentioning the homelessness and a possible solution, which I don't know if you folks are familiar with it, but basically they're talking about maybe presenting to Mayor and Council a proposition, whereas 12 parks within the city of Tucson would be assigned areas manned by NGOs, which basically would take care of homeless population. Okay, 12 of them, 24, 6 hours during daytime, and 6 of them, 24 hours. I understand that, tents would be rolled into the site, and there would be, like I said, 24 supervision in some of the areas and 12 hours supervision in others. Is this a solution? Not sure. Why? Because basically we are creating a new situation here. We do have a situation on our hands, so we have to do something about it. Santa Rita Park closing is one thing. But as you may probably not know, as the vice chair of Armory Park Historic Zoning Advisory Board, we finally green-lighted the renovation of Armory Park as well. Okay. And what's going to happen is that there's one more historic commission, which is required to close the deal. But basically, we're talking about a construction site in two parks downtown. Okay. because there is a homeless population. So we have a serious issue here. Where are those folks going to go? Okay. I understand your efforts and I appreciate, you know, you being after them and telling them that, you know, you cannot really stay in the washes, you got to keep moving. But that's not an answer. Where are they going? Okay. That's the problem. Okay. So whether we want to support Ward 6, you know, possible proposal for a mayor and council for the use of the parks for momentary homeless, solution. Again, like I said, I'm not sure. I don't want to send to turn into Los Angeles. Okay. Are we creating a condition whereas, all of a sudden 12 of our parks, you know, will have a steady homeless population? Not sure. Maybe we don't really have a choice at this point. Okay. You know, there is a definite movement regarding homelessness, which is trying to really qualify. If I'm sure you're aware that, you know, median land occupation, I'll call it, you know, is no longer allowed in Tucson. Okay, it's been passed by mayor and council. So little by little, like I say, we're getting restricted as where those folks can go. Okay. We applaud the efforts which has been made by the city of Tucson to create, you know, low income housing, you know, for older folks and for homeless people. Should we continue into that effort? Certainly. Okay. Where are we going to get the money is a good question. Okay. So I don't know that we have an answer at this point. I don't. Okay. Obviously, we need to speak more, you know, have more conversation about it. But we're getting ourselves into a situation where, again, in a very sensitive area, we already have a homeless situation. Okay. We're closing two parks at the same time. Okay. And, you know, not for a couple of weeks, but for a year, year and a half construction, whatever it's going to take. Okay. So this was my comment.
Robin has her hand up. Robin?
Sorry. There is a, first of all, I'm so sorry, the gentleman that was speaking and giving the report, what is your name?
Justin.
Justin? Good, thanks, Justin. Could you were talking about Monday Primavera is in Santa Rita, is that right?
Correct.
And Wednesday, did you say there's 30 agencies?
Yeah, the community outreach actually starts at Reed Park. It's gone on for, I think, 4 years now running. It's made up of El Pueblo, Hope, Kodak, Cornerstone, CBI, City of Tucson, a lot of different entities. So that group has agreed to come out on Wednesdays, every Wednesday.
Okay, and with the goal of, is this related to the master plan and moving homeless from Santa Rita, or is housing, what's the goal of that? Is it housing first? Is it?
The goal is to provide resources and another outcome for folks whenever the park is abated. We want to at least be able to be there for shelter options for them. That's kind of why we're there. Because, I mean, they're going to lose their space during the day.
So we're mobilizing increased support from Justin's team and the resources he has because the Santa Rita Park construction is anticipated to commence April 21st. Fencing goes up. We had spoken about that at the last meeting, and some questions have come up about the homeless related to that.
Okay, and then on Friday, thank you for that. And then Friday, who's out there?
So that's our encampment assessors that we have in the city. I'll be taking probably two of them down there. Those are city employees, outreach workers that will be offering shelter and spreading the message about the park closing.
Okay, and who, there's a commission, right? Is this the part of the community outreach? There's a consortium, right, of organizations that are working on this too, that I'm sure Parks and Rec is a part of that larger community group?
Correct.
Correct. And Primavera is the one entity that has decided with Homeless Protocol that they would be dedicated to the parks. So we use Primavera exclusively in the parks right now.
Okay.
Thank you. That was my question. Thank you.
Thank you. I do. I have a couple of questions. One is, you know, Casa Maria is so close to Santa Rita. My uncle lives on Third. And so do you have a concept of how food, I mean, I'm assuming that many of them are going to come to Reed. How are we helping them with food? This is also a park thing. Also, how are we going to be cleaning up Reed Park with the level of food waste we're probably going to be seeing, which can be quite dangerous, especially with, you know I used to have dogs and walk them around. There were times 26 or 7 years ago, there was so much waste in the park that I felt like it wasn't safe for me to walk my dogs there on leashes. So I'm worried about how they're going to get food now that they were able just to cross the street to get to Santa Maria, and also how we're going to deal with that in the parks when the food is there. So
historically, when we shut that park down, people have generally migrated to the east, down towards like Highland. Those people will still continue to get food from Cod. That won't stop. In fact, they will actually find a way to be able to bring food to those folks. They're very dedicated.
Yes,
they are. Very dedicated. We have food packs. We do have food that we are handing out. I don't expect many. I mean, I think we're getting ahead of ourselves by assuming that people are going to go up to Reed Park.
They already are.
Yeah,
I live a block from here, so I'm seeing the change.
But I mean,
every day.
To say that they're actually migrating from Santa Rita there to there, we're just seeing an uptick in parks, period, all over the city.
I would say it would be like any situation where we're monitoring what the condition is in the park and then we're pivoting resources. Certainly through the park dashboard as well, when we're getting reports of, you know, from the community of a concern of a potential encampment in a park. So our team goes out and does the initial assessment. If it's warranted, then Justin's team comes out and offers resources. And if we need to additional support and close the park down or close the area down, that's when PGD helps us. So we could probably sit here and hypothetically talk about anywhere that could be impacted, but until we actually see it, then we can put a plan of action in of like just this morning we're talking about, do we try Wednesday mornings to do targeted cleanups? I mean, all that is based on what we see in terms of trends. And then we're able to allocate resources appropriately.
As far as resources go, is Park seeing any more allocations for dealing with what we're all seeing coming just in general for our parks in Tucson? Is that being looked at with Mayor and Council at all?
I mean, we don't know what the fiscal year 26 budget is going to be yet. I believe April 8th is the final budget update, and then April 21st is when the city manager recommends the budget. So certainly right now there's a lot of dynamic discussion going on around a lot of things.
So as supposed advisors to Mayor and Council, how can we help you get more money for this situation?
If you're right there by highlighting your role, it's something that you feel passionate about when you speak to who you're appointed.
Or whoever,
representing.
Whoever that's going to end up being. Can we, as a committee, write a formal letter asking for more help for Parks and Rec to Mayor and Council? I know other commissions can do that. I don't know if this one can. I've never seen it done.
You are an advisory commission.
Yeah.
That's certainly if you choose
so to. We can advise.
So we can actually advise. We often don't feel like we can, but yeah, that's something I'd like us to consider, and we can talk about that later. Okay.
We are using any federal grants in for the incoming budget.
So the other thing I'm a little concerned about is this is a Santa Rita item, mm-hmm. and to talk about another separate topic would be kind of going outside of what was advertised. what I would recommend is we make that a future agenda item.
Yeah, I mentioned that.
Oh, the reason why I brought it up is that there was just an executive order that was signed today for a reduction of $12 billion from social services. I'm sure we're going to be the first one to get hit.
Let's just stick to Santa Rita.
Darren, did you have any questions regarding Santa Rita Park?
Yeah, and sorry if you already said this, cutting out a little bit at the beginning, but about how big is the population we're talking about?
That's hard to put a number on that. From when I drove by there today compared to 6 months ago, about a third of the population, what it was 6 months ago, I would say probably about 40 people right now that were in the park. But, I mean, it's hard to say because I'm seeing better usage of the park and less structure. So it's really hard to determine when you look at the park and who's actually on shelter and who's not when you look at the parks now.
Yeah, and I know it fluctuates a lot. And I was just curious because I know that as you guys go out there and you provide – information on potential different options. I just didn't know if Tucson right now with the, with the homeless shelter, you know, capacity, if Tucson had the capacity to actually offer up other options for these folks right now.
We do. Yeah, we do. We have well the capacity. Believe it or not, like on any given night, we have about 350 emergency beds that are not utilized in the city.
Oh, okay.
So we do have some beds.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that.
Bring animals in.
So not all those are low barrier. Those are the ones that we're working on. The beds that we don't get often taken are like our faith-based, you know, shelters and stuff don't get utilized as much, but the beds are there. I mean, it will come a time when it'll be the difference between what you want and what you need.
Thank you.
Could you tell?
Go ahead, Robin.
Raise my hand. Thank you. Could you talk about those beds again? These are with numerous agencies. You're saying 350?
Yeah, 300 broken up between like Gospel Rescue Mission. City of Tucson has three shelters. Old Pueblo runs a couple shelters. We have Anglum, Desert Cove. It's just a mix and match of all those, and that's just a rough number that keeps averaging out like every month that we're just not utilizing.
Right, and the requirements to stay? What do you
think? Rescue Mission will give you 7 days, so we actually had to plead our case to get our clients 7 days of a break there. Before it was face-based, the minute you walk through the door, now they get it by, I think, 7 days before any restrictions are imposed upon them. Salvation Army now is taking small dogs for me, but don't tell anybody. So they are taking small pets there. We are seeing a lot of the shelters now kind of understanding the need and actually, you know, making happen what needs to happen.
Okay. I guess what I'm saying, for all of these, do you have to be clean?
No. The only ones that are going to require sobriety are going to be Gospel Rescue Mission. I want to say, but depending on the client, you could be put on that kind of restriction and an action plan with the shelter where you are required to take detox if it's a problem. But our housing first model and the low barrier shelters we have don't require a sobriety. No.
Okay. That's good info. Thank you.
So, Justin, how many actually, when you go out there, how many take advantage of resources?
Not enough. It's a pretty low number. So, for example, to throw it out there, when we did 100 Acre Woods, 38 people moved, 6 people took shelter. So 6 people out of 38 decided to make a change, which actually to us, that number is not bad. I know that's terrible even to say, but there are folks out there that want the housing, but we just don't have it either. We don't have the resources right now. We don't have unlimited housing vouchers. The federal government has cut off a lot of funding from a lot of programs. They don't even recognize the Housing First model on HUD anymore. We can't even get any funding for any of that, so we have to rebrand. Yeah, there's a lot of barriers right now.
So I had a gentleman in the garden the other day, and I was talking to him, and he'd been on the streets for 3 months. And I said, there are resources out there for you. He goes, I said, there's Gospel Rescue, there's this, there's that. And he goes, I said, don't you have a phone? He goes, yeah, I have a phone. I said, call 311. I think they will help you, right?
They will.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't. No. And actually, you can call 311 and even ask for shelter now. So we've beefed that up now. We're hiring a resource manager that's just going to sit there on the phone all day and find shelter for folks that need it. Wow. I mean, the resource is there. It's just a matter of getting people to use them. And sometimes it's just not what they want. A lot of people want the low barrier, and a lot of folks are not meant to be in a shelter and can't handle a shelter atmosphere and need to be housed from the street, which we do have an MDOT team that does house people, per se, right from the street, right from an encampment, right into their units. But, again, the resources are very slim, very new. And I would say, like, even last month alone, I think we had 30 of those housing vouchers that we kind of dispersed across the city. So it's pretty slim right now with the resources to be able to actually aid somebody into something, you know, sustainable.
It's getting hot. Do you think they're going to, like, take advantage of air-conditioned housing or something, like, right now?
We saw an uptick in our cooling pods last year. We saw more people come to some of our cooling pod locations than we have in many, many years in the past. Yes. The elements here play. We get more people come in when it gets hot and when it gets cold. That's when people really want to make a change. But it's just a matter of us being there at that right time. I mean, I'm lived experience too. I was homeless on the streets in Arizona and up in Phoenix in '86. I mean, I've been there, but it's different than it was. I mean, we had help and resources. There was open door policies. Churches would let you stay inside at night. I mean, we don't have that anymore.
Good information. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Any other questions, Robin or Darren?
Go ahead, Darren.
I'm good. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry. You just mentioned open door policies that you experienced some protocols that were maybe less restrictive. Am I hearing that right?
No, the open door I was talking about was with my lived experience up in Phoenix. I think we're confusing that with something else. Yeah, that was like I don't know anybody around here in the city that has that policy anymore, that has an open door policy. Most of the churches have shut their doors to that type of procedure.
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm asking and what I was getting at, that I understand that. What was happening, and so I'm hearing you say that is no longer. So I'm just wondering about.
We need for 24-hour shelter right now in the city, even because there's a gap at night when nobody's out there, and there's no outreach workers, and police officers don't have the option to take people. So we are working to fill that gap with the 24-hour open door policy shelter, but it may take us a year to get there. But we do need a resource center where people can just walk in.
Okay, I think that's really important to know. I appreciate that.
That's why I brought up that proposal from Ward 6 regarding the use of golf parks in the city for, you know.
Between you and me, my opinion, that will never see the light of day.
It's not like a proportion. We're going to do something.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understood, and rightly so, but I don't think that particular item, like, is going to get any traction at all. We've had better proposals for sanctioned encampments. Jack Juleson proposed one years ago that was way better than that and wasn't putting it, like, in our neighborhood parks. We've researched around with Environmental Services using the landfill as a safe camping site. And every time we have proposed an area, we get that NIMBY effect, not in my backyard. So we've never been able to find a location or a site that was effective.
You know, on the other end, we're entering different times, whereas, you know, everybody's talking about a recession coming up and people losing their jobs. So I was mentioning Los Angeles before, whereas professionals actually camp in the streets because they cannot afford houses.
Yeah. We went into it all the time. We had a family at the QT at Valencia, the freeway. right behind the QT with a 3-year-old baby in his hand. And they were just coming from California. They got evicted out of their unit. They had no place to be, but we are seeing more and more people just genuinely displaced.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Am I free?
Yeah,
you're
free to go. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for your help.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Great.
Anytime you guys need me, just call me.
Okay.
And your number?
I put you on speed dial.
And then it's for employee retention plan discussion. Who's got this one?
So we provided the information that was requested, and so pretty much just open for what your questions are. I think either respect the information or the data.
Yeah, I guess one of the things that I'm most concerned about is when we're all right. So at the last awards meeting, I handed an award to a young man who left the city, and I asked him where he was going, and said he didn't know, possibly going to work for become an EMT. That's a really hard job. My former partner was an EMT firefighter, and I'm just wondering, you know, you said you don't really do exit, the city doesn't do exit interviews, but if we don't do exit interviews, how do we know why everyone's leaving?
And I believe I said we do.
A little bit.
We can't mandate it. We've had every situation, we've had folks in the house come in. Just recently, we had a long-time employee who retired. He wanted to see very low-key. He came in and sat at the exit interview. But non-firms, sometimes they just do a phone call and say, I'm out. You know, it just depends on the scenario. But Aaron, Sandy, and Teresa, who are HR folks, when they have someone that has indicated that they are departing, whether retiring or voluntarily leaving for another opportunity, they schedule the exit interview because there is information that they have to sign off on. They want to make sure that they have all the documentation that they need available to them for, say, COBRA. And to sometimes to get handoff, an official handoff of the ID, the keys, or anything that might be in their possession. But we've had folks that opt to not. They all come, we've had folks that come to the front desk and drop off all their stuff and walk away. So we make it available, but we can't force them to do it.
And when they're doing an exit interview, I guess my question is how comfortable is it for someone doing an exit interview? If they're having a problem with management, if they're having problems with this, is there an opportunity for them to have an exit interview with somebody who they would consider to be impartial? Can they request that?
The HR team does not work for us.
Okay.
They work for HR Central. They happen to be here. They have cubicles, offices that have glass doors. You can't hear anything that happens within there. So I feel like they have an opportunity to say directly to them. They could even ask them to do an exit interview offsite. Okay. You know, anything that's available.
And their direct management line isn't in the exit interview.
Okay.
So it really is space to
vent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've had a really long, rough week, and I've just come from another commission. But could you just remind me about ballpark about how many people we've lost just in the last
so they're full-time.
Okay.
Right.
Because part-time, that number is really fluctuating. Like, for example, right now we're hiring close to 500 non-firms. But in August, you would see
300.
Yeah, 300 of them exit. So I opted not to try to explain that out.
No, I get that.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So in... Oh, shoot. Okay, there we go. 2022, we had 33 people, 23, 47, 24, 55. Those who failed probation in that same order, 11, 13, and 13. Retirement, 6, 12, and 16. Go ahead, Robin.
Sorry, could you go over, I don't know if I'm catching it later. The sounds off. Those numbers again for 22, 23.
Sure.
These with the 20.
So the number of employees for 22, 33. For 23, 47. For 24, 55.
And these are civil service perms?
They might not be perms because I did list out probationary staff in that number. So included in that number are probationary employees that did not complete their probationary period, as well as full-time staff. And the other categories that they could have departed under is retirement, separation due to misconduct, voluntary, other employment, or resignation in lieu of discharge.
Okay, so I'm again just a, I wish I was there.
If it helps, retirement. This was in the packets that Diana sent as well. So just so you don't feel like pressure to have to write it all down.
Right, I understand. Did you just tell me if was retirement included in there or it's not?
Yes. Retirement is in there. So for 2022, 6 people retired. 2023, we had 12. 2024, we had 16. And when I had our manager, HR manager, run the report, we currently have 33 staff that are eligible to retire.
So,
and let's say 16 retired. Or 16 retired, were they were all eligible?
Yeah, you have to be eligible to.
Right.
So basically what we see over a period of 3 years is an increase in termination. Whether self-terminated or, you know, for whatever reason.
I mean, you have different, so voluntary, so failed probation is went from 11 to 13 for both 23 and 24. I can tell you that generally the failed probation ends up being the entry-level grounds maintenance position. That's the trend that we see. And then we have some voluntary that was 10 and 22, 12 and 23, 18 and 24. But the one thing that voluntary could cover, because it was all over the place, so I tried to summarize that. Voluntary separation could have been dissatisfied with the job, family reasons, no reason given or indicated, because they have a workday form that they fill. Personal reason, medical, employee passed away. I actually had that in every single year. No show, which sometimes we have folks that just stop calling in. They're not responding to our phone calls, and so they're deemed AWOL, and so then we remove them from the system. And then there was a handful that said dissatisfaction with pay. So kind of covering a lot of different influences.
Yeah. Plus, I would imagine the job openings being what they were those past few years all over the country and in Tucson as well, made it also hard to retain employers. Up until fairly recently, it was kind of easy to get a job, which is no longer the case. And I believe it's going to go the opposite trend, so let's see what happens. But it may have had an effect on the rising curve of
certification. On the vacancy side, this has been a really successful year for us for hiring. I think we're down to 3 vacancies, whereas this time last year we had about 14. But again, in the grounds maintenance realm, we naturally anticipate to see that cycle. And because of that, the city manager has approved for us to run with a 5-position overhire for groundskeepers so that we can basically always be processing. Because that is probably one of the areas that you do see the impacts once you're short-staffed that's less people to clean the bathrooms, to empty trash cans, to help us with all the things that are out across the 139 parks. So, yeah.
You know, I just get concerned when people leave, basically, when they've worked for the city for a long time and they're a large project manager and then just go leave to work outside of the city really fast. You know, that's the kind of stuff that's really hard. You know, we lost 5 big project managers all at once, and that's a huge loss of historical knowledge mm-hmm. for the department. And you know, this is the only thing I could think to do was to ask the question.
No, it's fine. We're happy to discuss. I mean, when we lost all the project managers, I remember, well, he wasn't part of that big group, but we did have Howard who was just ready to retire. He'd been with us for a really long time. And so what's nice is when an employee like Howard, I pointed him out just because he gave us 6 months notice.
Yeah.
So that allowed us to do recruitment, you know, be proactive, get his replacement on board. And I think that was probably one of the few perfect ones where they had like a month overlap. We've had project managers that came from other departments and decided that they liked the other department project management more than us. That's fine, understood. I mean, people leave for different reasons, and the good news is this group's been pretty stable in the project management team. At least over a year now, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Just about now.
So we're excited about that because then we have consistency.
Yeah.
But
there's red flags from the HR exit interview. She'll come and talk to us about it, but we don't get them very often. So I don't know that people are leaving in ill regard more than not. Like the person that you're talking about from the award ceremony, and, like for him, we were really sad to see him go too, but he'd been around so long. He kind of felt like we were an anchor instead of a boat because he really wanted to do something else, but he felt very committed to not just the department, but his participants and his staff and all of the things. But he was like, if I don't leave now, like I'm never going to leave and I really want to do this. So we were like, don't go, but he went in.
He was a favorite for sure. Yeah. You know, a lot of fun. You know, but you know, we've also lost some project managers that have just taken jobs elsewhere, and I think they did so very quickly, and no one saw it coming, and that concerned me. I just wondered why they would just suddenly leave the city.
I mean, we largely rely on being forthcoming or putting something in Workday or having the conversation. Call out Howard because I know he's the type of person that wouldn't mind us using him as an example.
Sure.
But I've had folks that have told me that overall the way city does things, they just think they need a change. They've done government for a really long time and feel like they have gas in the tank. We had an amazing supervisor. He came and talked to us and said, hey, I've got 2 kids about to go to college. I'm eligible to retire, but if I start with another city, I'll have a second pension. 100% supportive, and he ended up going to Pima, and now it's in Marana. And we hated losing him because he was awesome, but
we get it.
We do get it, and we do actually try to encourage the staff to also recognize that, you know, if you've locked in your pension here, you do have that opportunity to pursue a second pension, which for, you know, growing costs is reasonable.
Yeah.
The other thing before we go to Robin, I see her hand is up, that I did want to point out is that we've also seen in this last year the biggest number of non-perms become perms, which I always think is an amazing thing. So to become a rec assistant, to our new therapy inclusion coordinator, she was an intern, then she was part-time, and now she's full-time with us. So we have some good examples, too, of where we've been able to be that opportunity for growth. And I think that's awesome. Darren,
did you have a question?
Real quick. So I appreciate you going through the different numbers. And, you know, it sounds like, people leave for a lot of different reasons and, you know, retirements or, you know, not meeting their probationary requirements. I guess The only time I really get concerned about retention issues is if we start seeing a trend and, you know, it's hard to sometimes know why somebody's leaving if they don't do the exit interview. But as long as we're not seeing a trend of, you know, issues with workplace environment, you know, that type of thing, or issues with pay disparities and that type of stuff. Those are the things that, you know, that organizations can fix. And I don't think it sounds like you guys are having that issue. So I wouldn't be too terribly concerned about the retention. I guess my follow on to that though is, a couple of months ago, I'd asked a question because you guys had mentioned that you were having a hard time filling applications with qualified folks. And I'd asked a question on SkillBridge, and somebody had, I can't remember who it was. Somebody had said that you guys were looking into that, and I was just curious how that went and if you've been able to get anything moving with that.
Yeah, so coincidentally, so Andy, who's also in the room, our business administrator, I just did her 3-month eval, and one of her goals is to actually get the SkillBridge scope developed so that we can start to look at engaging someone with. We've identified at least one project that we think would be a perfect fit for that internship program. But really what we needed, Darren, is someone who had the capacity to engage it. We did get an education session in this room, in fact. Matthew, who is the city employee that leads the recruitment and matching of folks. And so for those that are not familiar, SkillBridge is where the military will pay for the final 3 months of an individual that's leaving service, and it supports them to be able to get some civilian on-the-job training and hopefully, ideally, match them up to potentially an opportunity where they can apply. And there's a city, I think the number is something like 14 that have been hired so far. So yes, we are definitely still in the mindset of doing it. It's just giving Andy the 3 months she needed to get her feet rooted in so that she could then start that as the next project.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, as they move forward with that, if you guys need any assistance or anything, in my regular job life, I'm the director of staff over on Davis-Monthan, and so I can help coordinate some of that stuff and, you know, some of the projects with regards to SkillBridge. I'm also retired military, so I'm a huge fan of the SkillBridge program because it gives our folks an opportunity, like you said, while they're still receiving military pay, to go work for a civilian organization and get the training and experience and hopefully do a good enough job to where if a position is open, they can, you know, a seamless transition into the workforce. And it also, on your side of the house, it gives you somebody to work with and really see how they do for 3 months before offering them a job. And, you know, so they're probably going to make it through their probationary period if you've already seen what they do for 3 months.
Yeah. No, I think it's a great opportunity. I believe the city is also going to be, I can't remember the acronym for it, but it's a program for the spouses of military individuals and looping them into job opportunities in the city. That one also is in the works from what I was told recently.
Okay, so thank you.
If I wanted a job, I would come in as a probationary person, and what would my pay be, and how long am I on probation?
So probationary period is a year.
Yeah.
And your pay would be based on the position that you applied for, what that range of pay was, and where we have a tool called the base pay calculator where that places you within the range. The one thing I did want to bring up, because Darren was talking about retention around compensation, the city managers already talked about it at study session, so I'm comfortable with just saying that there is efforts that the city is doing as well on compensation, even though we're in a situation where we're tightening belts. He's committed to a 3-year compensation program so that we do have staff that stay with us because they know that increases of some kind are ahead. And so that is part of the mechanism of what they're talking through right now in terms of adopting the budget. But in simple terms, yeah, that's how you would, when you come on board.
So they can't mess up for a whole year.
But the way I look at it too, and I can't speak for other departments, but I think the staff here can. I'm a big proponent of the 3-month check-in, the 6-month check-in, the 9-month check-in.
Okay.
A lot of folks who end up getting failing probation, they just can't get in on time. They're not committed to working. Sometimes they even tell us, this is not what I thought this job was going to be. But it is my theory, and what I've tried to encourage everyone is, if in 3 months you see there's something they're struggling with, it's the opportunity to give them that feedback. And then by 6 months, you should be able to tell them whether they're actually applying that feedback or not. I'm not a proponent of the literal 11-month failing of probation. We should know well before then. But I mean, in an entity of 240 people, 13, it's not a terrible number. It's not an ideal number. But I think what I've seen is less and less failing of probation, at least this year alone. So that's hopefully a good thing, you know. We'll see what
25% Well, hopefully people are getting out of the fact of COVID. You know, it's like it was hard to roll out of bed and turn on the computer and get to class on time. You know, it was really hard to do that for so out there. Having a hard time getting to work out in the house. That's
yeah.
COVID didn't help us with time management.
And the staff are encouraged to also find out, you know, if it is an attendance issue, what's leading to that attendance issue. Sometimes we've heard that maybe it's their caretaker for parents, and maybe they need a later start time. So I think that we do try to approach it in a humane way of saying, is there something that we could adjust a little to give you time to get caught up before, you know. So trying to deploy those resources is also something we try to embrace here.
That's really helpful to know. I mean, because we're sitting here and we don't know the inner workings and how everything's going on. So the only thing we can really do is ask.
Right.
And but it's good to hear that you're willing to work with, you know, timing, because sometimes that is just they need an extra half an hour. Well, the traffic is worse if they've got to drop a kid off or a parent.
It all depends on the situation.
Yeah.
We had someone that wasn't doing great on the morning shift. We were able to offer an afternoon shift. Unfortunately, they also struggled with that, but at least that time we were able to say we tried to be flexible.
Mm-hmm.
So we're flexible within the constraints that the city would allow us to be.
Very progressive.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. No more comments, Darian or Robin? Robin, your hand is up.
Robin, your hand's up here.
Oh, you're muted.
I don't read lips.
All right.
Here we go. I really appreciate the staff. I think there is a very concerning trend. Just because I was a 39-year employee and I loved going to work every day of my life. There was no better job than a job working for the City of Tucson Parks and Recreation, and period. And so based on that, I'm very concerned about the increased trend, and I think that we'll probably revisit this at the end of the year when we look at 2025. I'd love to hear your thoughts, but I'll wait on this. About morale, because I'm just really still in touch with a lot of employees and do a lot of volunteering around the centers. So I guess I would just say that that's it. I'm concerned with the trend. I don't understand it.
And I think it is really difficult to be able to evaluate this without exit interviews, because I remember my exit interview. And it wasn't within the department, it was downtown. So I think that I wonder about that. So we'll take a look at the numbers and the end of the year. And I thank you for the information.
Thank you. Next, we have 10 minutes for partnerships with recreation centers for programs and services.
10 minutes.
So, Robin, you had asked me to put together a report about what different programs and services our centers are utilizing, you know, to provide services to the community that comes into the centers. And so reached out to all of our coordinators. We have 15 centers, 3 dedicated senior centers. And so based on that collaborative information. So at Clint, I'm going to go specifically center by center. Is that what you were?
Yeah, that's good. I want to, good. Okay, so you're going to report on this. We don't have a report on it, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Good. I just was hoping I didn't miss it. Thanks.
So at Clement Center, we definitely have a relationship with the ward office because they're right next door, and so we collaborate all the time there. We also collaborate with Girls Neighborhood Association, and then we collaborate with 4 or 5 different senior organizations because we have a senior population out there. We actually have PCOA Mills out there as well, which we've had for, I think, like 6 or 7 years, but it was never a state that would qualify for the PCOA senior meals. And so that was really exciting. I mean, I guess kind of exciting when it happened, but, you know, we're servicing that population out there. And so we have the 4 or 5 different senior social services that come out monthly, whether it's blood pressure checks, wheels, you know.
Really?
Yeah, just all those good things. And so that's kind of Clement and what they're utilizing in the spaces that they, you know, people that they utilize to help their clientele.
All right.
At Cherry Avenue, which is a really small center, it's 3 rooms. It's on the south side of town. Has a really great relationship with their neighborhood association as well. Tucson Clean and Beautiful. And the actual neighbors in that community really utilize the center for rentals and coming into those spaces. So we've had lots of gender reveals. We actually had a wedding proposal there because they met there in the center. So that was really exciting, I know. But then also the different senior populations as well. So a lot of the groups like Sumita, R12, all of those groups, they hit all of our different centers because of our senior population. We have a pretty exciting bunco group that meets there regularly, and then they do things outside of work together or outside of the center. So we call them the bunco gang.
That's
their deal, yeah. And we even added bunco to Senior Olympics because of them. at Freedom Center, which is down the street here. We also serve PCOA meals there. We have an extensive collaboration with the 29th Street Thrive organization. And so that is a city-driven organization. And basically what it is they try to, you know, energize the 29th corridor to make sure that they have the resources they need to, you know, whether it's food, whether it's education, whether it's space. So we work with them. They are currently giving us money for 2 non-perm workers in order to increase our programming hours at Freedom so that we can offer meeting spaces for different groups in that neighborhood. So one of the organizations that they're, I can't remember what the name is, but it's for the women that are of the Iranian culture. They want a space to meet and to get together and kind of have like a book club, but not at someone's space because they don't have the room there. So we are offering a space for them there. We also collaborate there with U of A, of course, all the social senior programs there. And then we got a new partnership there called Grow, Grow, Grow. And what the woman there, her name is Jody, it's a nonprofit organization, and she teaches girls about riding bikes and like the right way to ride bikes and all of that stuff. But along with riding bikes, It's like a leadership camp. So she teaches them about being leaders and the choices that leaders have to make and, you know, how you lead other groups that you're in charge of and, you know, about bullying and body image and all of those things. And it all kind of relates to riding bikes. So she's been in there probably a couple of months. She has 8 or 9 kids. They're from the community. They go to school there. So that's been really great.
What's that? Freedom, are you saying?
That's Freedom, yeah. It's called Grow, Grow, Grow. And so they get hats and they get stickers and they get bikes. And she got bikes donated from, who was it?
Trek.
Trek, that's right. So all the girls have like brand new bikes. Like, it's a really cool program. And she runs out of there. They meet twice a week. And it's like a 4-month program. And then at the completion of the program, they get their bike and a certificate.
Right on.
Okay, so Randolph Center, which is right down the street. So Randolph collaborates with the Handball Association, as well as, like, we have a new RC track there at Randolph. Did we talk about that ever, RC track?
I don't remember.
Okay, so one of the staff there at Randolph came up with this idea about remote control tracks or remote control cars. Him and his dad and his brother did it when they were growing up. We don't have one in the city. We had a pack of man basically behind the center. He met with park staff and got their support and our support, and gave him some funding, and he created this track out there. We had a grand opening. I think at the end of February, there was probably 100 to 200 kids. I'm there every weekend because my kid is obsessed with RC cars now, and so, you know, you go and you kind of learn and you maneuver, and it's really cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so we're collaborating with that. There's a huge RC club here in town. Mm-hmm. Like, they're kind of insane.
It's a thing.
The amount of like money and time and commitment these grown men into that. It's really cool.
Used to be an RC place on Speedway.
There was, yeah, and that closed down, and so they were really sad about that, yeah. Robin, did you have a question?
No.
Okay.
No, but do you want to go over all the 15 centers or is that what we're gonna do?
I don't have to. I was just
That's good. I didn't know. No, I know I planned for 4:45. I have a group coming in here for a meeting at 4:45, so. I was going by the agenda, but that's cool. What I'm wondering is if, and Donnie, I appreciate this so much. I really, is there any way that we can get a copy of that? And then if we have any questions, go over it for the next meeting?
Yeah, I'll send it to Diane and have her send it out to you.
That would be good.
No worries. Yeah. Sounds
okay,
good.
I know we're. I'm very sorry, and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'm curious, but are we involved with the Tucson Meet Yourself?
We're only involved in the sense that we work with them to facilitate their event.
So I just have a story to tell about racetrack, the little racetrack. This is funny because it happened in Reed Park, and I will never forget it for as long as I live. Those things, they move like prey. And I was seeing a father-son, because it's like the closest thing to fishing that you get in Tucson, right? And so I saw a father-son doing it, and it's going over the hill. It's over there on the west side. And the biggest hawk I'd ever seen went down and grabbed. It was a good son, grabbed it and picked it up 5 feet and dropped it. Yeah, I mean, I was just like, wow. It's still there. It's never going away. I'll die with that memory.
Maneuver like that.
Yeah, they do. They look like prey. Yeah, or a rabbit or something. Yeah.
And we know people
can only
use
that's great.
Yeah.
Well, innovation is the biggest thing.
Yeah. Some more resources for the audience.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It was an indoor win at Tucson Mall.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. You're right. I've seen it.
Yeah, I happened upon that when I was looking for something else. I'm like, what the?
Yeah.
It's a huge room. It's like, amazing, yeah.
I've never been on a ball and everything.
Yeah, me either. But, yeah. All right. You can send that on?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Awesome. A report. Reports and announcements, Parks and Rec Commissioners. You have anything you want to report on? Let's start with Robin.
Well,
I met with Ward 3. I know that it's time for extravaganza, right, coming up at Donna Liggins. So KD was telling me about that and their open house. Are you going to go over open houses April 5th to 10, from 10 to 2? It looks like a really exceptional event. I started a sewing club. But I wanted to also say I went down to Armory on the 17th because I had a bagpiper go over there to play for the seniors. And that they were, oh, my God. There were probably 200. They had a great event. Everybody was dancing. I mean, it was Parks and Rec at its very, very best. So I just thought that was really heartwarming. And hats off to the Armory staff. I wanted to say that. That's about it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Darren, do you have anything to report?
Dropped off.
Oh, he's done? Oh. Sorry, folks, I have to leave. Okay. All right.
Maurice,
now I see it. Maurice?
Yes, I want to thank Jasmine Chan and her team. We had a meeting at the Armory Park Neighborhood Association, and she explained at length what's going to happen with Center Arena Park and Armory Park. And it opened, you know, a lot of people didn't know about it. So it was really, you know, extremely positive. I think it was a really, really good job. And I'm looking at Robin, and I see in the back of her, and on her hat, she's got Sculpture Festival. For folks that don't know what it is, it's at the Brandy Fenton Park on Upper River Road, and it's happening Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's the one of the best cultural festivals in the Southwest. Strongly advise you to go there if you've never been there. It's a payday, paying day. I think it costs $100 to get in, but Saturday and Sunday is free. And the pieces to be, the sculptures to be purchased are unbelievable. Okay, they're sculptures from the world over. And it's really, it's a Tucson special. Go for it. Okay, it's really good. Outside of that, just to go ahead and mention it. Yeah, I'll probably see you in that moment.
Awesome.
And same thing with Armory Park. Okay, we finally, like I was saying earlier, we green-lighted the last plans for the park, last details. So we're going to be going construction, hopefully somewhere around July. And it's going to be beautiful. I don't know who's doing the labor, whether it's Parks and Recs or it's a construction company. I'm not sure.
It'll end up being a contractor.
It's going to be a contractor.
On board for doing that construction.
Great, great, great. But we finally got, you know, an agreement on colors and lightings and landscape and the whole thing. Took a long time, but we finally did it. Okay. So it's, again, very positive, and we're looking forward to it.
Thank you.
I don't have any announcements.
You don't have any announcements? Okay. Okay. All right. I'll let them know what I'm doing. I took a walk at Michael Perry Park, looking for the Wagon Tails Park, and it was like, oh, my gosh, I took a wrong turn, and I ended up
Park.
Yeah, I know. It's like, wait a minute. Where are we? I looked on MapQuest, and it's like it took me anyway. I did 13,000 steps.
There you go.
It was a lot of steps. I told my granddaughter, okay, honey, we're on Manitoba and Escalante. If I pass out, you call 911. So hot, and I'm happy. Like, no, you're such a drama queen. It's like, I am dying. So I visited the park. We found it was an adventure. The air show was going on, so we kept looking up at the planes. It was really a good day, but it was rather warm. And then I checked out Mario Nobel Park, which is really coming along. I'm doing a bike ride on April the 26th. Will it be done by then so that we can use the splash pad?
Unfortunately, no. It will not be done by April.
It looks like it's coming along, though.
It is, but a little too...
So I know. I'm doing Star Night in the Pink Garden on March 29th from 6:30 to 9 o'clock. We'll have the award-winning Gallego jazz band. They'll be playing from 6:30 to 7, and they're amazing. And the astronomers should come in about 7 so that we can look at the stars. And have, I was going to have a hot chocolate, but I looked at the weather and we might have horchata instead. And it looks like it's going to be a hot show. So it'll be fun. And April 5th is story time in the garden. If anybody has little ones they want to bring, that's cool. And April 26th is the bike ride.
I went
at the March one.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Cool.
That's great.
Yeah, so April 26th, we're riding from Challenger School to the Peace Garden, have some fun in the garden, and then ride back to the school. I'm trying to get the fire department to wet the kids since we don't have a splash pad. It's like, so I was hoping.
You never know, they might. Actually, I do have something. I took a walk at Christopher Columbus Park, and I posted the walk and on my Facebook page, and there was... I'm surprised how many people still didn't know about the name change, you know, but everybody's like, oh, but it was very positive. Everybody said, oh, that's so great. So it's getting around.
Good.
Yeah.
When you say Christopher Columbus Park, you mean the Danny Lopez Park.
Danny Lopez Park, yeah. Thanks.
I'm a little dyslexic.
I'm a low blood sugar right now.
I know, but he didn't bring donuts.
Yeah.
Just checking, just checking.
I was trying very hard not to say Silver Bell Park. But it was beautiful, and it's always nice there, and I do appreciate the pack gets to walk their dogs around that area. That's just so helpful for them.
It's good. Yeah.
All right, so what else we got?
We got staff report.
PJ's ready.
Right. I'll be brief. So we've hired on 13 new specialists for the summer of 25. They're going to begin their role in mid-May. We hired two new perms as pool supervisors. Jesse Woody from was an external hire, and Megan Ramirez, which was an internal hire. We're interviewing for an aquatics coordinator next week. We'll be in charge of all our swim lessons for the summer, aquafit classes, and rentals. Catalina, right now, we anticipate reopening that on June 1st. We're replacing the bromine with Pulsar. We're plastering tile decking, floor, and new boilers. Fort Lowell is repaired, and shockingly, Adrian got it filled. So it looks like the splash pad will open on April 1st, so I got some good news. And the pool will open on the 6th. We hired on 30 new lifeguards, and they've been trained, and we got about 100 in the process. And Sarah's been killing it. Dealing with that and making sure that we have classes for everybody and people are where they should be. As of yesterday, all 6 of the 7 slides were refurbished and are absolutely stunning. They did an amazing job, and we'll be slip sliding away this summer.
Oh, nice.
Excellent.
Stole Laura's thunder, and she needs a good credit. And Barra Nepal and Joaquin Marietta are coming along nicely. I believe they're pouring concrete at Joaquin tomorrow, and they're moving along nicely.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So are you in charge mainly of aquatics in general?
I'm in charge of
water. Of water. May I ask a question?
Absolutely.
It seems like we have some pools down that we would normally have open in the winter, and we don't have the greatest hours at Edith for working people to swim laps. So right now we're down, Catalina is down, and Sunnyside would normally be a winter pool, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also down.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them seems to be a boiler issue, right?
Catalina was all those issues I explained. So both boilers went down. And when the second boiler went down, we saw it as an opportunity to replace the Pulsar unit, do the plaster. And that's the problem with the year-round pool. There's never a good time.
Yeah.
But once the second boiler went down, that was our window, and we went for it. So that should be open on June 1st.
USD.
And we had it. Yeah, we were waiting for them.
Okay.
So
yeah.
We had to do all the paperwork and all the fun stuff and order.
So we expanded some hours at the ARC to accommodate some more lap.
Around Catalina.
And we put it at Catalina. I went over there and put signage up that there was available time at the ARC. And every single morning from 5:30 to 9. And
yeah, but they're never going back to night hours over there, are they? I used to swim nights there, so I just, that was like 6 to 8, something like
probably
that.
Probably not. I think with everything that we have opening, you know, that we're anticipating for the extended season and for summer, and this gets back into our priorities, it seems like mayor and council really want all the pools open all of June and July, and prioritizing when we can keep the rest of these pools open, knowing that that June and July is going to eat up half our non-perm bucket.
And so what's going on with Sunnyside? Why is that closed?
Right now the plaster is not in great shape, and we're still working with Sunnyside School District to see how we're going to progress with that.
And I'm kidding.
Yeah, okay. I understand. Problems happen. I remember I stopped swimming in city pools for a couple of reasons. Once they turned to bromine, and now we switched them to chlorine. And then also they just weren't dependable. Bowlers, you know, everything was going out. And I guess just something I'm going to say out loud and have a, you know, like some kind of public record is that worker, you know, swimming is bar none the best exercise for people with any kind of health issues. And in general, it's just an amazing exercise. It increases circulation. It, you know, it does, you're less likely to hurt yourself. It's really great for your lungs. You know, it's just so good. And when you don't have a reliable source for swimmers, swimmers are like runners. If we can't swim, we get weird. And, you know, so I'm just wondering, you know, I'm weird anyway, but I mean, it's harder, which is why I swim faithfully at the U. But, you know, for everyone's benefit. But in general, I'm just like, I have somebody visiting right now and he would love to swim and he'd love to go visit other places. He used to live here. Almost every place he would normally swim is closed. And so, and he's not used to driving in Tucson. And I don't know if you all have noticed, but traffic is really bad and everything is wrong. And I, you know, I gave him my car to drive around and he was done. He was like, I don't want to drive here anymore. And I get it. So he's not going to be able to drive east or west to go swim, you know. So I don't know what the solution to this is. I guess there isn't one. I mean, it's great that we have so many pools open in the summertime, and that's mainly for the kids. But how are we taking care of the adults?
Oh, and I'll be honest with you, you're preaching to the choir. I coached collegiately and competitively for 38 years. I don't know of anybody who's more proponent of swimming than I am, and I agree, but we're also dealing with pools that are 40 to 60 years old, and there are some of them, I mean, just be honest, like Fort Lowell, I'm just like, wow, you don't know where to begin sometimes. And like when I got here 2 years ago, I did not know where to begin. I had 25 pages of notes of stuff that should be done or had needed to be done, and we've whittled that down. But the joys of pool ownership are the same as a boat. The best day you have them is the day you get it and the day you get rid of it. it is. And it's constant. It's like pumps go. Coordinators go. Boilers go. It's always something. And that's what my wife says about me, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, that could go for marriage and divorce as well. Well, thank you for explaining that. I know it's been a long haul with the city pools, you know, I moved here because there were so many of them, you know.
And Adrian, who's not here tonight, he's busting it. He's doing everything he can to keep this. And I get to the point where I'm afraid he doesn't even want to call me anymore.
That's horrible. I'm sorry.
So I have to have a breath before I answer it usually.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. Well, thank you for doing your best. I appreciate it.
I will be brief.
As far as maintenance goes, we're in full swing prepping for spring and summer. We're working with vendors to get through park cleanups, recovering a lot of things through the winter. We've done probably a handful in the last 2 or 3 weeks. We're also working on getting things ready for in preparation for the monsoon. We're trying to take a little bit more proactive approach this year and assessing some trees that we know are going to be issues in areas. We're taking a shot in the dark. 2 years ago when I got here at the same time as TJ, it was the east side. Last year it was the west side. So we're gonna hope for the best this year around. But for the most part, that's what we've got going on right now. Getting ready for the growth.
How many tree trimmers do we have?
We do not have any tree trimmers. We've expanded to be able to use, I think we have 7 or 8 contractors now. So we can respond quickly, and then we're trying to be a little more proactive this time around.
Just a couple events that our team will be at in the next coming weeks. We'll be at the Egg Hop at Quincy Douglas. So that's with some concept plans of new play experiences for Silver Lake Park and Madison Park. And then we'll also have a little kids activity for during that outreach event as well. This weekend on Saturday, Las Vistas Neighborhood Association is having a community yard sale. So there's a couple of other departments that have projects going on in that area. So you will have staff there, and then we'll also have flyers with information projects that we've got going on. And then we will also be at Cyclovia. We will be tabling alongside other city departments. That one will kind of have a general, here's all the things that are going on in the park system from a capital perspective. We'll also have department information as well. So we'll be there the whole event. And then this month we've got Santa Rita Park closing down on, I guess, next month. On the 21st of April, groundbreaking is scheduled for April 24th. Jacobs Park, we are soliciting bids for construction. That is due on April 1st, so anticipating construction to begin in the May-June timeframe. Mission Manor Aquatic Complex, that one's with procurement now. That one should get released next week, and then we'll likely be looking at kind of a summer time frame for that to break ground. And then Historic Fort Lowell, we are awaiting a contract award through the county in a couple of weeks, and then we'll get started over there. A lot of groundbreakings, ribbon cuttings, you will all be invited to over the next 6 to 8 weeks or so.
When is Mission Manor breaking ground?
That one we're anticipating in the summer. I don't have a date for that yet. Yeah.
And so we'll get emails for all these ribbon cuttings and stuff. And do we need to confirm with you so that you can put out press releases or? Okay.
Well, if we get more than 2 confirmed
callers,
we just send out. We just send it to the clerk's office. Maybe.
So as you know, we're in the middle of all of our summer hiring. So as TJ said, we've onboarded successfully 30 lifeguards. We currently have 82 lifeguards that are scheduled to be in the next 3 lifeguard classes. So that's really great. We do have a swim instructor job description. It's with Comp and Class right now. That will be posted soon. We need to fill 66 positions for that. So that will be up once that's approved. For recreation, our KidCo rec workers, we've successfully hired 26, and we have invited potentially 213 to interview over April 3rd and 4th, and they have an estimated need of 88 individuals. For KidCo senior rec worker, we've also successfully onboarded 7 candidates. For parks event worker, we've offered this opportunity to 2 individuals, and we're waiting to see how that goes. For sports event worker, we've invited 94 individuals to interview, also over April 3rd and 4th, and they estimate a need of 40 individuals. For therapeutic senior rec workers, we've invited 16 individuals to interview, and those will take place on April 2nd. And for our therapeutic program coordinator, we've invited 11 to interview on April 1st. That's kind of where we are with that. Yeah, a lot of movement.
So the guys are not here today. Rude. So I will do Rec program for them. So we do have two open houses coming up in April, like Rob had mentioned, at Marty Bergman on the 5th from 10 to 12. There'll be a jumping castle out there. The splash pad will be open by then, and they'll have tours and all the things there at Marty Bergman. And then at Donna Liggins Center on the 25th of April, and that one will be from 9 to 6 all day, so you can get tours, and they'll have different activities throughout the time. We've already had 4 open houses, so we had one in January, one in February, and 2 in March. And we've had over 800 people attend those open houses, and we've sold over $15,000 worth of membership passes.
Wow.
And so one of the gigs when I went to revenue management school talking about revenue was offering a point in time where you could get a yearly membership for half the price, but only during a specific period of time. And so if you attend an open house and buy a membership, you can get a year membership for 50% off. Last year we increased our sales by $100,000. So people are catching on because everybody's going to everything to get their membership. So it's cool. It's a good thing. Spring break camp we had last week. We had 350 kids in that spring break camp. We used to offer spring break camp in all of our recreation centers, but when numbers have dwindled, so now we only offer them in 5 different centers to cover different areas of town. I think that a lot of parents are working from home still, and the days of COVID have made them be creative and figure out different ways to have their kiddos watch during those times. So our attendance has decreased, but we've kind of pivoted that way. We do have 2 ACONs actually on April 5th, one at Quincy Douglas and one at El Rio Center. El Rio has never had an AC event before or an Easter event, and so they're trying their hat in the ring, and I hope they have a, you know, super success event. So Quincy's is from 10 to 12, no, 8 to 10, and El Rio's is from 10 to 12 on the 5th. April 6th, we have the 3rd annual Battle of the Bands. Super fun event if you've never been. You know, teen garage bands competing for a golden microphone, literally a golden microphone.
Nice.
And some studio time to record an LP, which is really fun. It's always a really good time, and the bands are, you know, they go from stuff I can understand what they say. But it's a good time, and the food trucks are really good, and it's a nice day, and it's usually really warm, so you go bring an umbrella. Our extravaganza, which is our department-wide Easter event, is at Thompson Park on April 12th, and so we're all gearing up for that, and we've been working with Ward 3 and a couple of folks from the community for that event, and so we'll be out there. That one is from 10 to 1. And then this weekend we have the 3rd annual City Youngers softball tournament. So it's for city staff. We opened it up to friends and family. There's 16 teams competing out at Lincoln Park this weekend all day on Saturday. We have 2 teams at Brown Parks. So we'll be out there showing that. So I'm supposed to pull it. Bringing the ice and the Bengay and
the aspirin.
And the aspirin, yeah.
That's very busy.
Isn't there a ribbon cutting with a 1200 North Silver Bell?
Is there a ribbon cutting, Sierra?
1200 North Silver Bell? Is that Joaquin Marietta?
Yes,
that's it. Is it in April?
That one's in May.
May 17th.
I'm going to have to begin.
I'm going to reserve that for the next.
And then in terms of directors' announcements, reports, not right now. To take advantage of this thing, I can't confirm or announce that. Our general fund is not supported by federal dollars. We have federal funding in capital projects, so that is still up in the air, but no, we have been issued absolutely no indication of lack of funding. So I can use that as the reports and announcements to confirm that as of today. but our general fund is not impacted by that at all.
Yeah.
Oh, and I forget about it because it's such a
quieter time. Yeah. I know. It's weird.
So we are currently this week going through our accreditation visit. This is our third time going through the process, but we opted to do it 100% virtual this year, this go around. And knock on wood, everything so far, and they've been pretty happy with what they've seen, and they haven't seen this a lot. What will happen is on Friday, we have a closing meeting. They would indicate at that time their level of confidence in us being recommended, but then it wouldn't be until September at the NRPA conference that we would actually get our designation. But Sierra deserves a lot of the credit because she got us all organized and motivated. It's 155 plus standards that you have to provide evidence for. And from the first meeting that Greg and I had with them 2 weeks ago, including this past Monday, they were really impressed with a lot of what they saw, the organized, the quality of programming. So we'll definitely report out what the results will be for Friday, but early indications are, yeah, it's cool.
As expected.
Good job.
It's been going so well. I forgot about getting, like, we should do more shots. Robin, your hand is up.
Is that it for reports?
Yes.
Because I don't want to, well, we're still giving reports. I think I'd be very, very remiss, or we'd be remiss if we did not acknowledge the life and service of Congressman Grijalva and his service. You know, it's just, he started, I mean, he was at El Pueblo Center for so long working in that community. And lived a life of service, and I think I would just like to personally acknowledge all that he did for us at Armory and El Pueblo, all the centers. He was there all the time. He used to say he loved to come for Taco Tuesday, so he'd just show up and talk to the seniors and lived a very impactful life, and it all started when he was at El Pueblo, and not certainly not where it started, but he spent time as the director there when it was under the Department of Housing and Community Development. So condolences to his family.
Absolutely. Yes, his service was today. It was beautiful. So you also have a proposal to rename a park that I saw in the updates.
Yeah, so that actually just launched today, too, and that would eventually come to you all. It's an amending. It's Field 3,
yeah.
And Udall, after a child who passed away, his parents have set up with, I want to say, Southern Community Foundation to fundraise and support board at the field. And named the field after his son.
Thank you. I appreciate that because I wasn't understanding why it was being renamed.
He used to go to, he attended the Little League that uses those, you know, candy in the Little League.
Okay.
His parents still are pretty actively involved in it.
So it's just a bit, I don't think there's going to be a lot of.
And they're funding, they funded it.
Yeah, so generally you would have a naming fee. So I got permission from the city manager based on the fact that they're going to be fully funding a brand new scoreboard covering all installation costs there, which exceeds what the naming fee would have been. So yeah, it's a way for them to invest for the benefit of those who participate in the Little League in future years, but also to honor the son.
This is just for one field.
One field.
And three, yeah.
And then, just really quick, I wanted to interview Sarah Turpin. Sarah is our new aquatic superintendent, so she reports to TJ. So another layer of supervision and management to help with the, you know, our team. 20 schools, and it's going to be 12 special kids.
Welcome to the family.
Thanks.
She's been.
Sarah's a good example of non-perm to full-time and then full-time growing within the organization. So.
Nice. I guess we're
at future agenda items. Mm-hmm. You had something, you said?
Oh, didn't Maurice have something?
Do you have a future agenda item?
I don't know if this is a future agenda, but we do have Easter coming up. That's always a great time in Reed Park in particular. We will already be past Easter by our next meeting, but there is just so much trash left after Easter and so much candy, some of which is fatal to dogs. And I used to tell people, like, I know at least three people whose dogs have died trying to walk their dogs after Easter at night, you know, where they can't see what's going on. And of course, they're the little ones, you know, it's, you know, chocolate, it's really dependent on the kind of chocolate and the kind of dog and their genetics, but it can be really, really bad. And, I don't know. Is there a way to warn people? I mean, I just don't know what to do.
I remember when I started and we had met through the Barnes & Noble discussion, you had told me. And I remember working with Sierra to do some education on it. And we tried to remind folks to clean up after themselves. I know the staff would really appreciate it because that Monday after Easter Sunday, it's a coordinated lift at all of the bigger parks. I don't know, all of them, Danny Lopez and Reed and a few others are just trash.
It's pretty bad. And to give you an example, like, I got so fed up, I just started bringing up trash bags and started picking up. A month after Easter, I had one of those mega trash bags I managed to fill just with Easter trash that was still lying about. Just me. And that's a lot. And it's not, you know, Parks and Rec's fault. It's just too much. And I don't know what to do about it. You know, I feel like there needs to be a sign warning. There may be, you know, it might be hazardous to walk your dogs here. I don't know. I know. I just was thinking, tossing up some ideas for now and in the future, because it's going to keep happening, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we can think about it from the other perspective, which is visiting the park after Easter. Be careful with your dog.
Yeah.
But, you know, eating something that
can
make them sick, kind of thing.
Because they just get the stuff so fast, you know.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I have two of those.
And it's not just the dogs, it's your little ones, too. Yeah, the little kids that will say, oh, look, there's more candy, and they'll pick it up.
Right, yeah. I mean, if you can see a dog doing it, there's, you know, you can carry hydrogen peroxide, and that's like the quick trick. Yeah. But they often can start the candy. Yeah.
Like taking it out of their mouth.
Yeah. So, okay, that was one thing. Maurice, did you have something?
Yes. I see that we're meeting on April 23rd, 2025, which is basically 2 days after the construction is going to start on Santa Rita Park. So, is there any way that we could somehow have folks by Santa Rita Park in the general area and see what's going on as far as the homeless population, like a follow-up, you know, what happened after the construction started? Did everybody, you know, migrated to Reed Park? Okay. Or, you know, let's get an idea of what's going on. Also, I'm a little concerned as far as the safety of, you know, park workers' stuff. All of a sudden, we're going to have an influx of you know, homeless population, various parks. Let's keep an eye, okay, see what's going on. Let's try to get some feedback, maybe from, you know, your local, you know, maintenance crews, you know, see if they're being impaired in their daily life. I think it's really important. Okay.
So,
about
the homeless population, I want to make sure we're clear. Value of Diana when she's trying to get us to provide everything for the next meeting. You'd like to know a follow-up since the groundbreaking and the closure on the 21st of April if we are seeing any immediate signs of impact. And then what is exactly is it you want to know from the staff?
Well, basically, you know, are we seeing an influx of, you know, folks that weren't there before that all of a sudden migrated to, you know, the various other parks? And if that's the case, is this an impairment, you know, to safety or, you know, there, you know, as far as the maintenance folks and all that? I think we should keep an eye on what's going on. You know, that's my concern. So,
I'll ask Justin if he can provide an update. So to be clear, it likely won't be in the materials. It'll be something so that we can do a verbal update at the meeting.
That'll be fine. And like I said, you know, if maintenance folks, or, you know, see that, you know, all of a sudden, you know, these crowds that weren't there before, that, you know, show up on a regular basis, it's probably something we would like to know.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, my brain just turned back on. I did have something else for the agenda. Were you finished?
Yeah, you're good. Go ahead.
I'm going to forget you don't say it right now. We were talking about how we could help you get more money in the letter. It's been a very long day. There were plumbers involved. Yeah, so if we could talk about a little bit about maybe, you know, somehow form a letter about how we can get more money for Tucson Parks to help deal with the extra load of trash, not just with the unhoused, but also with the heavy use of parks now that, and we're going to have even more heavy use of parks because we have a lot of issues with federal parks being shut down and having less things. So I'm just looking at this as like a future issue around our, you know, the only outside free outside places for people to go are going to be our parks. So parks needs more money around trash, maintenance, pickup. It's not, you guys are doing a great job with what you have, but I think we need more and we're going to need more in the future. So I'm just trying to figure out how we do that because we've never in the time, I've been here, what, almost 3 years, maybe a little more, and I've never seen us do anything like that before.
Can we do a fundraiser?
There was a letter at one point. I don't know what the issue was. I remember Steve drafting the letter.
Okay.
But it just wait.
So with the quorum stuff and, you know, like other commissions are a lot more loose, we can all talk to each other. Would you suggest that one of us draft a letter and then, or Robin, do you like drafting letters?
We'll talk about that for now.
Yeah, I don't know. I just was wondering, anybody have any thoughts?
I'm thinking here, but can we do a fundraiser? Does Parks and Recs do fundraisers?
The foundation needs to.
Yeah, the department itself doesn't. We have donation mechanisms, but we don't initiate fundraising.
But I guess I'm not clear on the letter. Were you talking about?
Well, we advise mayor and council, and I think one of the things that is becoming really clear is that Tucson Parks needs more money for cleanup because we have more unhoused. People are unhoused, you know, every day. We see it on the Tucson forums. Help, we need tents. We need this. We need that. Federal parks are being closed down and not being managed well. So this is our only outside. So I'm trying to think ahead of how we can, as the commission, push advisory and council to use more of their budget towards this. And how do we do that?
I know that City of Tucson is having their open forums about the budget. There's three.
I just saw the news that today is speaking. I can provide that plan and share with you all that there will be three town halls on budget that they're trying to get.
So we could, we're doing it individually, but I find as a group, we usually have more impact. So
if they listen to us, we're just advisors.
But we can push our council people.
I mean, we could.
We could.
Anyway, I might draft something up and send it for the next meeting.
Okay. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
Well, sounds good. Robin, did you have more to say?
Yes, I definitely wanted to ask, here we have 5:15, and
So, Donnie, I really sincerely apologize. You put a lot of effort into your report, and I'm hoping we can put that back on the agenda, and then we'll get it. And if we have any questions about that, we can do it at that time. Thanks.
Thank you. I think we're good. No more? Then I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
You have a motion.
Do I have a second?
Yeah, I'll second the motion.
All those in favor?
Say hi. Hi.
Are you good, Robin?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you. See you all, kind of.
Thank you. Sorry it's so late. It's like...